Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. Did you know that some libertarians are minarchists and some are anarchists? A minarchist is somebody who wants a minimum government, a very small government, and an anarchist is somebody who opposes the idea of a coercive government at all. And in the Libertarian Party, minarchists and anarchists work together to cut government. Now, one big question that many people in the anarcho-capitalist and voluntarist movements have is, if you oppose government entirely, then why should you be involved in politics in the first place? Now, as an anarcho-capitalist myself, who is heavily involved in politics, I think that's a question that needs to be answered. It's an important question. There are many different ways in which you can fight government. And you have political means as one method of fighting government. You have methods of force. You have violence as a means of fighting government, the way that the founding fathers of this country fought their own government at the time. They fought it with force. You also have civil disobedience. You know, people like Thoreau, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, they used civil disobedience, which was an open and active violation, deliberate public violation of laws, with the acceptance of the penalties, understanding that by engaging in that kind of disobedience, it was going to cause the government to lose its moral high ground, to lose its moral right in the eyes of the people. And each of those have been successful at different times in history. Now, I personally believe that this particular time in history, the most effective action we can take is almost this type of political infiltration. That means getting involved in politics exclusively and entirely and only to cut government. Not to fall into that ridiculous Republican trap where they say, well, we're going to cut some here and we're going to grow some here. We all know how that works. We know that that just leads to only the growths and none of the cuts. But I believe that if you can dedicate yourself to only cutting government, not to cutting a little bit here and growing some here, not to cutting nine things here and growing one thing, but just to cutting government, to only cutting government, to doing nothing but cutting government, then I believe that that is the correct thing to do, or one of the many correct things that you can do in the modern era. Now you might ask, well, what about just refusing to vote? Couldn't I just do that? Couldn't I just refuse to vote? The idea being that if a small enough percentage of the population votes, then it will make our elections seem like the same sham elections that we mock in other countries. And I can understand the pull of that, but let me tell you two things. The first thing is, there's no way for somebody to tell the difference between a principled anarchist non-voter and someone who's just too lazy to get off the couch. And even if politicians can tell the difference, they're going to spin the difference. They're going to say, these are people who are just too lazy, don't worry about them. They're not going to say, oh my God, these people are trying to opt out of the system. They're going to say, these people are too lazy to vote. Now, there are other options besides voting. There are other options besides politics. But failing to do anything is not one of those options. It's not an effective option. If you want to engage in civil disobedience, you have my support. I'll do whatever I can to encourage that. And hell, if it's a good enough strategy, I might even join. But civil disobedience, whether it's big, for example, refusing to pay your income tax no matter what, even if you get arrested, that's a big kind of civil disobedience. Or whether it's refusing to pay some other small tax, whether it's refusing to get a business license. Those are all types of civil disobedience. But doing nothing is not a type of civil disobedience. If you say, listen, I'm just going to follow all these laws. I'm going to pay my speeding tickets. I'm going to pay my taxes. I'm going to, you know, get all these licenses. I'm going to play by their rules. And the only law I'm not going to follow is I'm not going to take the option to vote. That's not civil disobedience. That's civil obedience. That is literally saying, I'm going to follow whatever laws you do, and somehow that's going to make you feel immoral. That's not going to work. That's silly. That's nonsensical. Now, before we talk to our first guest today, I want to talk about some of the different ways that you can help starve the beast. Our goal right now is not to find a different way to fund big government. Our goal is to defund big government. Our goal is to cut government and then keep cutting it. And any dollar that you can pull out of the hands of government, that's something that's worthwhile doing. Some people have taken a very extreme step, which is they've renounced their citizenship, left the country, saying, listen, I'm not supporting this government anymore. I don't think that's necessarily the best idea for everybody, but maybe it works for some people. What's interesting is last year we had the record high number of people in human history doing that. Last year, 4,000 people gave up their citizenship and said that we're done with this thing. That is a powerful and measurable stance. That's a much bigger step than just not showing up to vote. That's an active step. But you don't have to go that far. Let's say that you have a business. Let's say you run a business that has a feature such that it can be done from a different country. Well, you know what you can do? You can run your business from a different country. Yeah, you're still required by law to pay income tax, but you're not paying property tax. You're not paying sales tax. You're not doing any of those things. What you're doing is you're helping to defund government. Remember, we don't want to find a different way for government to bomb hospitals in other countries. We don't want to find a different way to fund government's war on drugs. We want to defund government. We want to take away their money. We want them to be unable to do the harmful and damaging things that it does. So that's something you could do. Let's say you want to call out a problematic law. You can voluntarily and deliberately break that law. You can do it publicly. You can get a large number of people to break that law publicly as an act of civil protest. Folks like Adam Kokesh have done things like that and drawn attention to the ridiculous laws that the government violently enforces. And that's also a great way to fight against government. The most effective thing you can do, though, in my opinion, the single most effective thing that you can do to help defund government, to help take away its money so it cannot fund things like the Department of Education, is twofold. One, get involved in a campaign, in a real campaign, and when a campaign that's entirely about cutting government. When you get involved in that campaign, you're going to get more media attention for the ideas of cutting government. You're going to provide an important counterpoint in any open and public debate. You're going to encourage other people to do the same thing. The best thing that you can do is you can run for office. And when you run for office, there's a few things you can do to really put more pressure on government and find more ways to cut government. One of those things that you can do is you can sign one of the Libertarian Party pledges, and those are going to be released to the public soon. And those are pledges to say that you, by signing this, you are pledging that you will, as soon as you're elected, for example, sponsor legislation to defund the NSA. Or you could take it even a step further. There are some libertarian candidates that I've heard about that are actually working on setting up contracts, binding contracts, that say not only do they pledge to do a thing, that if they don't do this, there's going to be serious financial consequences. By changing the nature of American politics into one in which candidates pledge to cut government and then have no choice but to follow through on that, that's an effective way to cut government. Not showing up to vote while following all the other laws, that thing that I call civil obedience, that is not an effective way to cut government. Civil disobedience is an effective way to cut government. Now, if you want to do some of these things, if you want to just literally find ways to cut government, to defund the Department of Education, to cut the Department of Agriculture, to get rid of the FDA, to get rid of the DEA, to defund and downsize and eliminate the TSA, to downsize our redundant and damaging spy agencies into one single tiny limited spy agency, or maybe get rid of that one too, go to lp.org/states. Contact the state chair, whoever the contact is in your state, and get involved in a campaign for 2016. In fact, after you get involved in a campaign, your next step might actually be to run for office. You don't need to be a lawyer. You don't need to have a political science degree. I've run for office 4 times now. I'm not a lawyer and I don't have a political science degree. But you do need to be willing to dedicate yourself to cutting government. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We're going to talk to our first guest in just a couple minutes. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. I want to talk a little bit about some of the different areas that different candidates across the country have pledged to cut government. One of the biggest areas that has come up is the income tax. People have said, we need to get rid of the income tax, and they're right. Now, what a lot of libertarians have realized is we don't actually have to replace that income tax with anything at all. We can cut that income tax and replace it with absolutely nothing. The reason that we're able to do this is because we have other types of incoming revenue is one thing. But the bigger area that the bigger reason that we're able to do this is most of what the federal government does is either entirely unnecessary or counterproductive. And actually, we're going to be better off if we get rid of them. For example, like all people on Earth, I've occasionally gotten sick. I've had health problems. I had to have surgery in my life. And what would be good for people in those situations if they could pick the best surgeons in the world? If they wanted to get surgery done by the best person who was trained in Japan or the best person trained in England, the best person trained in Germany, the best person trained in Canada, if they could choose between everybody like that, that would really be the best for the person in that situation. Now, fortunately, I've only ever had to have a very minor surgery, but those who have had to have major surgeries, you really want to be able to pick the best. If you're having a minor surgery, you might want to think about the cost. You might want to say, well, listen, this is not really complicated. This is not, you know, this is not like inner brain surgery, you know, removing a mole. It's a minor thing. Maybe I might want to think about the different costs. One person charges $100 and somebody else charges $10,000. You know, for something this minor, I might go with the more inexpensive one. And again, that's benefited by cost. Now, right now, the government is spending your money preventing doctors, the best doctors in the world, from all other countries in the world, your government is spending our money. It is stealing your money through taxes and using it to keep those doctors out. It's literally saying that if you are the world, the best physician trained at Oxford or Cambridge, trained in Japan or Korea, you can't practice medicine in the United States of America. We don't want you here. We don't want your awesome, amazing skills. We don't want your amazing talents. We don't want you coming and curing our people. No, we're fine without you. We'll just make do with what we have. That's just stupid. I mean, I don't know how else to describe that. That's a nonsensical approach. If the government simply did not have the money to do that, then you would be able to pick from the best doctors. You could get the best surgeons in England. They might just decide to set up a practice right over here, and you would have access to them. If the government did not exist, if the government did not have money to fund that, then you would have access to better doctors. If the government did not have money to keep out lower-cost, identical drugs from other countries, if it didn't have the money to enforce those border restrictions, then instead of paying $100 for a prescription drug, you might pay $10. Again, that's something that is – right now the government is literally taking your money and using your money to prevent you from paying less for drugs, for medicines. If you didn't have the government doing all these kinds of things, you would have more access to more things. Now, right now, I want to talk to our first guest today. We're going to talk a little bit about ways in which he's going to cut government and ways in which we can get things a little bit more downsized. Sean, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, Arvin. Yes, sir.
All right, Sean, thanks for being on the show. Let me ask you this. For our guest, what exact position are you either running for? I know you're also active in the state party level. Let's give our listeners a little bit of a background there.
I'm running actually for the 16th Congressional District here in Pennsylvania, which is outside of Philadelphia, as the Libertarian candidate. So I've run in the past when we've, you know, had the county organization, and it's pretty wild how things have lined up, and it seems like an opportune time, and the message is as relevant as it is, as it was before today. So
let's talk about a couple parts of the message. I mean, you know, we talked in the top segment about some of the advantages of getting rid of some of these healthcare restrictions, but let's talk about the other type of drug. You know, we talk about pharmaceuticals, but there's also recreational drugs. What are some of the things that your campaign is talking about when it comes to the use of marijuana, the use of other drugs, the legalization, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, Arvin, I've been involved with the hemp cannabis movement for at least 20 years. Business-wise, my focus is on the industrial hemp. We do the Hempsel pretzels here in Pennsylvania. I contract with Pennsylvania bakeries, and we supply no THC, it's hemp flour. I refer to that as agriculture. When it comes to cannabis, that's another issue that I totally respect, understand. Certainly like to use the right name when we're talking about this, the issue of cannabis, and it's not actually a drug. I mean, it is a plant and should be kind of regulated like a tomato. There are very minimal to nominal regulations on that. So part of my campaign is to repeal the restrictions prohibiting our farmers from growing industrial hemp. Mm-hmm. And Pennsylvania right now is trying to work through how it's going to be regulated. Do we adopt the New Jersey attitude or the Colorado attitude? Mm-hmm. The other issue is my campaign, and I absolutely respect the right of the individual to self-cultivate. And in this way, we're cutting out a lot of the greed that is going to create the rules and regulations for an individual, whether it's through recreation, spirituality, or the need health-wise because of cannabis's benefits. But they need to be able to grow without the threat of losing liberty or being fined or harassed.
And that's absolutely true. Let me ask you this. How far would you want to take this? I mean, you know, we have some libertarian candidates that say, listen, I want to legalize one drug. Other libertarians candidates say, I just want to get rid of the DEA and legalize all drugs. You know, where do you fall on that spectrum?
I actually, in my time, solely and have advocated for the abolition of the Department of Drug Enforcement. There really is no relevant need for them. You know, it's a good layer to peel off the federal government. Start it through Richard Nixon, who doesn't have really a good track record. So I think as a political party, that's a no-brainer. There shouldn't be a thing of drug abuse. Folks need help, whether it's abuse of alcohol, sugar, or whatever, but that comes from an individual and a group, you know, level. So I would certainly advocate the abolition of the DEA.
Let's talk about some of the benefits that we see. I mean, there's a lot of people out here who say, listen, I don't really do any drugs. Why is it good for me? And, you know, a lot of times we talk about, you know, violence. You know, what do you say to people who say, what is the benefit to me of getting rid of the DEA?
Well, even if we could take it to a local level, I think law enforcement need to focus on predators and violent folks, tricksters and things of that nature. So to free our law enforcement up should reduce the amount of time spent on hurting folks that really aren't doing anything but hurting themselves. We obviously have a political agenda as an agency that needs to keep its funding going, so they need to justify, you know, their existence, and I think they really don't have a good track record. And, you know, rules and regulations are through the Congress, or it's a natural right. We shouldn't even be worrying about that. You know, just if somebody's under the influence, or under the influence of something, it could be alcohol, it could be sugar, it could be Twinkies, cannabis, whatever. But if a crime's committed, that's a whole different issue. But for the average person, this agency serves no purpose. So if we're going to reduce our federal budget, this is certainly a good way to start.
And that's the great thing about that is when you get rid of something like the DEA, I mean, and you see these huge benefits we're seeing right now. You know, we have two states that have legalized marijuana. Already the cartels are hurting. So, I mean, you see that reduction in violence. That's an easy sell, and that helps us downsize the next department and the next one. Before we run out of time, I did want to ask you about the TSA, one of the other extremely unpopular departments. What would you do with respect to the TSA?
I would do the same thing. There's really no justification for this agency. It certainly needs to go back to the airlines themselves, who certainly want safe air travel. If we have the drug issue taken care of, certainly there's not an issue in that sense of, you know, screening for drugs, or, you know, because it's a commodity item, and that's not the best way to ship any type of product. So the TSA certainly has to go. They don't have a good track record. It's really hindering us if we want to use air travel. I certainly don't like the hassle of having to go through that. I don't want to be treated like a criminal. So, you know, the TSA should absolutely go too, and that will reduce our federal budget and decreases paranoia about traveling.
The really nice thing about that is that if we get rid of things like the DEA, get rid of things like the TSA, one of the really nice things is we're going to be safer, because everyone knows a private airline is going to be much more concerned with protecting its planes and its customers than a government ever is going to be.
And you're not giving up your rights to an agency, or your responsibilities to an agency, that you yourself would do your own due diligence. You don't fly on crappy airlines. You don't, you know, go places where you feel insecure. So, you know, absolutely.
And the other really nice thing about that is the second part of it, we get rid of something like the DEA, that means that we're going to see the ability finally for a lot of these drug businesses to settle disagreements like sane people with courts and mediation, and not kind of resort to just public violence to settle any dispute. And that's, I think, something that pretty much everyone can get behind. Let me ask you this before we run out of time. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, where should they go?
Right at the moment, until we have our website up, and it's just a matter of filing and a bunch of other stuff, if they're Facebook, go to Sean Patrick House. I'm pretty open about that. My personal one is my personal one, but I've put a lot of information out there. My five-finger approach on what I'm thinking locally, and I can certainly go into depth on other items I think will benefit the voters of the 16th Congressional District when they pull the lever for me.
Absolutely. All right, Sean, thank you so much for taking the time to be on this show and for sharing your insights and plans for downsizing government.
Thank you, Arvin. Have a great day, guys. Keep sowing the seeds.
Absolutely. Guys, we just finished talking with Sean House. He is running for the 16th Congressional District in Pennsylvania. If you want to learn more about him, go to Sean Patrick House on Facebook. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Let's talk about state-level government. You know, we talk a lot about downsizing federal government, which I think is good, and I think is absolutely one of the most essential things we can do. But sometimes people say we should downsize something from the federal level and move it to the state level, and I disagree. I think we should downsize it at the federal level and then downsize it more at the state level. With me right now is John Hoop. He's running for the State Assembly, 70th District in California. John, welcome to the show.
Happy to be on.
John, let's talk about what are some of the parts of California government that we can downsize? What can we get rid of over there that's going to benefit all people in California, and maybe even by example, people in other states as well?
Well, there's several different functions that appear to be duplicated several times over. I mean, this isn't a case of maybe two different agencies doing the same thing. Sometimes you have as many as two dozen agencies involved in a single concern. A great example is water, which has been a big problem here in California of late. There are somewhere in the neighborhood of two dozen or more different agencies that all have their hand in our water somehow, some way. And you know, you could streamline this a lot better and it would be more effective. It'll also be more difficult for government agencies to pass the buck and pass the blame when they fall short of doing what they need to do. You know, you have things like the Department of Conservation and then the Department of Water Resources, the Natural Resources Agency, the Water Commission, Water Quality Resources Control Boards. Natural Resources Agency. You know, you can see how you have groups of people within our state government that are doing duplicated functions and still failing.
Now, it sounds like we're not saying that you could get rid of one or two agencies. It sounds like you get rid of a whole bunch of agencies just from this.
Yeah, there's 408 state agencies that are listed on the California website, and mm-hmm. and a lot of people seem to think that there's actually probably somewhere more in the neighborhood of 600 if you actually look into it a little deeper.
What do you think, how many of those do you think we can just start to get rid of?
403, probably. I mean, if I had my way. There's a lot of stuff that goes on at the state level that doesn't even need to go on. I mean, here in California, we have very highly regulated lives. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's $9.361 billion in full-time employee budget payroll. And state employees. So that's a lot of money that we're spending on a lot of different things that really just restrict our lives. And somebody's got to pay for it, and you guess who ends up doing that? It's the taxpayer. So I would say that you could probably eliminate, you know, in a more serious answer, half of these agencies without significantly affecting the state's ability to run the state government.
One of the really nice things about that is when you get rid of these agencies or you downsize a lot of these agencies, it actually allows people to more easily start businesses, engage in commerce, and all that kind of stuff. Do you feel that that holds true in California particularly?
Yes, very much so. There's a lot of agencies in California that are there simply to take away your rights and then sell them back to you in a license. That's a big problem, and businesses have to deal with that perhaps even more than your individual citizen. The vocational licensing boards in California are numerous, and you know, you have a multi-page website that tries to tell you where you need to go to get the appropriate license or complain about a business that's licensed. I mean, when you have a website that you can scroll down and you still need a second page to list all the vocational licensing agencies in the state. Obviously businesses are being put into a box and being told to think outside the box to be successful. And that doesn't really make any sense.
And that's extremely true. I mean, that's a problem that we have in Maryland. It's a problem we have in so many states where just stuff that has no reason to be licensed at all is being licensed. And the result is it just basically helps two people. It helps bureaucrats because it gives them something to do. And second, it helps the already entrenched businesses, the ones that already have lawyers and retainers, the ones that already know about how to set up all those ridiculous things. And it makes it harder for, you know, the people who are like younger, people who may be very skilled with cooking but maybe not as skilled with filling out 10,000 pages of forms. I mean, is that something that you feel also holds true in California the way it does in Maryland?
There's a lot of things. I mean, everything from starting a business to spending time with your child on the weekend, it involves massive government involvement in terms of state agencies. And I say, you know, spending some time with your child on the weekend, a good example is the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It costs $47.01 for a fishing license in this state. And that doesn't even get you access to the ocean unless you pay a $5.14 ocean enhancement stamp fee. So I think that DFW is a little bit too involved in our lives at this point to where, God forbid, somebody inherited a boat or decided they wanted to live on the seas and be a commercial fisherman. Good luck. I just happened to be up the coast a little bit near San Luis Obispo, and there's a company by the name of Patriot Sport Fishing there. And I talked to one of the owners, and the attempt by California and the federal government to join two wildlife conservation areas is going to essentially squeeze this business out. It's already extremely regulated. So even the established long-running businesses are feeling the pinch.
The advantages that we also see from that is that when you get rid of some of these departments, you can also start to reduce taxes. Now, California, what's the tax situation over there, and how can we improve it?
Triple. You get taxed triple on some dollars that you earn here in California. Wow. You have obviously the federal income tax. California has a very socialist type state tax, where it's, mm-hmm. it's somewhere between, it's up to like about 12% or 12.3%, somewhere mm-hmm. in that neighborhood. And then if you hit over $1 million in salary a year or of income a year, then you get an extra 1% special tax. So you have that, and then you have a 9% sales tax, and they'll bill you sales tax on their own fees when you purchase things from the state. You get triple taxed on some dollars that you earned here in California.
Now, if we get rid of more and more of these departments, it sounds like we can probably get rid of more and more of these taxes as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you have to understand the size of any agency that serves the people of California is massive. There's 38.8 million people, and that's just kind of, you know, the estimates with the documented individuals here. We're probably pushing 40 million if you start, you know, really counting heads, so to speak. But if you put an agency in place and it's expected to serve nearly 40 million people, any agency that you eliminate is going to eliminate thousands of employees, probably. So the payroll of that will significantly drop the state's budget, which should mean taxpayers paying less taxes.
What's really nice about that is there's all kinds of research that shows that when you get rid of a state employee, if you get rid of a government job, you're going to get at least about two private sector jobs. I suspect it's more because there's a lot of state jobs whose existence is only there to get in the way of private sector creating jobs. But, you know, conservatively, people say, so we're also talking about a potentially major job growth as well in California.
Yeah, there's a great study that was done by the Journal of, that was published in the Journal of Libertarian Studies by James Rolfe Edwards, called The Cost mm-hmm. of Public Income Redistribution and Private Charity. And they mm-hmm. talk about what happens when you create a public sector job, what the actual drag of that is on society, mm-hmm. especially considering the inefficiency of whatever their function is in their public sector job. And I think it was something like you get about 1.65 to 1 production out of private sector employees than you do out of public sector, or something in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you do get much more production. You create more jobs. I mean, I'm a philanthropist by trade, and in charity, we the average efficiency rate is about 70 cents to the dollar goes outward to the people that are being helped. And then you have the public sector that does social programs, and we could eliminate a lot of those agencies and turn that service over to the philanthropic world. They're only getting 30 cents on the dollar to the people that need help. So you got to tax $3 for every dollar of help you give out. So, of course, eliminating them, that would exponentially start lowering our tax burden.
And the great thing about that is it would also make it easier for the job creators, the future job creators, the young people right now who are saying, listen, should I start a business or should I just not do that because it seems like way too many licenses and nonsense? And you get all those people starting businesses. Some of those are going to succeed, hire more people. Create. I mean, you're sowing the seeds for a lot of jobs right now, but for a humongous number of jobs in just, you know, maybe 5-10 years.
Of course. I mean, the number of jobs that are gained with freedom, just in general, is always going to be a good thing. I mean, we were doing wonderful as a nation. Not that I'm only 30 years old, so I can't exactly go back to some of our heyday with personal experience. But from what I understand, this country was an economic powerhouse at one point. And that was because there wasn't a whole lot of government involvement in our economic progress and in our workforce. There was, you know, you graduate high school, or even if you don't, you just go to work. And as long as you work hard, your life improves. And that's an incentive that creates jobs. It creates wealth. It creates income that now we don't have, because the government has put a proverbial glass ceiling over all of us by limiting the amount of money that's really available to be earned by anybody other than them.
I think that's absolutely true. Let me ask you this. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, what's the best place for them to go?
Well, they can check out my campaign website. It would be John, J-O-H-N, Hoop, H-O-O-P, .com. And
awesome.
There's Twitter. You know, you can find me on Twitter at John Hoop, C-A. And Facebook.com/JohnHoopCA.
Awesome. John, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today. And I really appreciate all the things you're doing to try to help push down government in California.
Yeah, I'm happy to be on and happy to be participating in this. Somebody's got to do it. So I guess that's what we've all been tasked to do.
Absolutely. And, you know, guys, John couldn't have said it better. It's something we all have to do. It's not something that, you know, no one's going to magically appear to run for office. That's somebody who you're waiting for to run for office. That candidate you've been waiting for your entire life. That candidate who's going to step out there and actually work to cut government. That candidate who's going to work to cut taxes, make it so people can start businesses, create jobs, improve healthcare, improve everybody's quality of living. That candidate you've been waiting for is almost certainly you. You've been waiting for yourself. You need to go to lp.org/states right now, and you need to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. And if there's not a camp, somebody running for the position you want, if there's not somebody who inspires you, if they're not somebody who wants to cut government enough, that somebody is you. You need to get involved, and there's nothing you can do to advance the cause of liberty that is even a tenth as effective as running for office. When you run for office, you're going to bring tens of thousands, or if it's for a federal seat, even hundreds of thousands of dollars of free media coverage to the cause of liberty. You're going to electrify people. You're going to scare the Democrats and Republicans, put pressure on them, make them cut government. And that first step is up to you, lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We just finished talking with John Hoop. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Have you checked out Teen Wealth Radio? It's a show for teens, their parents, and educators. Hosted by Brandy England, along with regular weekly contributors, Teen Wealth Radio will cover the topics that teens need to talk about. Plus, we discuss a book of the week and a movie of the week. And each show will offer a challenge to our teen listeners that they can share on our private Facebook group page. Be sure to tune in to Teen Wealth Radio, live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We talked to a state-level candidate in California, and let's see what a federal-level candidate is going to say to us today. My next guest is Alex Appleby. He is running for U.S. Congress in California's 9th District. Alex, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Let's talk about ways in which we can downsize some federal departments. Specifically, I want to talk about the Department of Labor. What are some things we can do about? Well, first, explain to the listeners what is it. What is bad about the Department of Labor, and what can we do to improve that?
Absolutely, and I could give you my own perspective as a businessman. I'm an entrepreneur, financial advisor here in Northern California, and the Department of Labor currently. has a ruling that they're trying to come out with that is really going to affect the lower class and middle class Americans in their retirement accounts. And they want to add regulation, you know, on top of what's already there, to require just more cost. It's going to end up lowering the amount of middle class Americans that are going to have access to advice. They're, you know, really going to be increasing the amount of fees. For example, a client that wants to invest $100 a month into a retirement account is now going to have to pay $100 to $250 per hour for advice that, that used to be able to be included in the cost of their investment.
And so they're literally,
go ahead.
They're literally saying, they're just, I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, that's, sorry, if you want to help somebody out with the retirement or, you know, include that as part of a package, now you can't do that. You have to charge them more.
Absolutely. It's going to hurt small businesses. Companies that have less than 100 employees on their 401k accounts, they're just not going to be able to offer those benefits to employees because the cost is going to be so high. And so it's really, you know, stuff like that. The Department of Labor is just meddling in things that it shouldn't be, and we need to cut that down. And, you know, I'd say eliminate the Department of Labor altogether. They're not benefiting the consumer in any way.
Let's talk about some of the benefits we get when we just get rid of the Department of Labor. I mean, we don't need it. It spends half the time driving up costs, spends half the time just lying to the public. What are some benefits we see if we get rid of the Department of Labor?
We're going to have increased employment. More companies are going to be able to hire people. They're going to be able to provide more benefits like retirement accounts and health insurance and other insurance-type benefits to the employees. Mm-hmm. And they'll be able to afford to have more employees on staff, which creates more jobs, creates more revenue for the economy. It's just a trickle effect.
One thing that a lot of people like me and you who have our own businesses, we think about all of the costs. A lot of times, though, when people are first starting out or if they have a job, they don't really understand all the costs. They're saying, well, what difference does it make to me if my employer needs to spend this many thousands or tens of thousands or millions of dollars following silly regulations? You need to realize that those are tens of thousands of dollars that they cannot pay you. Like, the government is competing with you for that money. It's taking away money that could be given to you, even if you don't run the business yourself. Now, let's talk about some more benefits from cutting. What are some other aspects of, or some other benefits of getting rid of the Department of Labor, or if there's other departments that you think we should get rid of, what are some of the benefits of getting rid of those?
I think really the biggest thing is money. It's, you know, and maybe that's what I see being a financial advisor. Mm-hmm. But like you said, just the cost involved, payroll is the biggest cost for most companies and most businesses, especially small businesses, which is the backbone of our country. And so with small businesses having these expenses and having these additional hoops to jump through, it really hurts the consumer. They're not able to hire as many people. And, you know, it's just a losing situation for everybody, except for the Department of Labor that gets to charge fees and gets paid by the government to be there.
Now, I want to talk about there's so many of these departments, and we talk about getting rid of them. I want to talk about how, let's say we are successful in doing, let's say we get rid of the Department of Labor and Education, all these different departments. From a financial perspective, what happens if we start getting rid of all these different, just pointless or actively damaging departments? What happens to the average person's life?
I think it just gets freed up. They're able to have opportunities they didn't have before. Private companies can come in and provide oversight and regulation to protect consumers. I think it's important to have protections for consumers, but that needs to be on a private level. It needs to be on a smaller local level, that if they're not doing their job, then the free enterprise system allows for another company or entity to take over and provide that consumer protection.
And we already, I mean, you know, people are like, man, that already works. Most people, you have a place that you trust for movie reviews or book reviews. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you have things like the New York Times where the so-called experts do stuff. You have things like Rotten Tomatoes where everybody kind of seems to vote. You have, you know, Amazon, where you have systems for this already today, right now.
Yeah, today more than ever with technology.
Yeah. And it's, you know, when we have things like, you know, these antiquated things, the Department of Labor and all that, just getting in the way of progress, we realize that removing them is just going to increase the speed of progress, and it's going to make us able to do more with what we have and have much more than we have today. Now, before we run out of time, let me ask you this. Are there any other specific things that you want to make sure that people know about your campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. We're really going after liberty. I think that serving in office should be a term of service. I served in the military, and I saw it as a term of service. And I think it should be the same thing in government. We need to stop having career politicians that are lining their pockets with taxpayer dollars, and people that come in there for a term of service. Let's serve our community, serve our country, and then get out of there and get back to our regular career, back to life as usual, I would say. And so if anybody wants information on my campaign, you can go to voteforalexappleby.com, and Appleby is spelled Apple B-Y. And I'm also on Facebook at Vote for Alex Appleby, Instagram, I am Alex Appleby. So I'm on social media, and a lot of great information on there on my viewpoint, stances, and places to support.
And guys, I can see Alex's website and Facebook page right now. There's a lot of great information. If you want to get involved in California, go to those websites, see what's going on. And if you want to get involved in your state, there's so much you can do. Alex, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Yeah, thank you, Arvin.
Guys, we just finished talking with Alex Appleby. He's running for Congress in California. You guys have heard today what real political action looks like. You've seen people pledging to cut government, to downsize government. You've seen people working so hard. I mean, you look at the websites, the Facebook page, you can see that they're putting in effort. You can see the events that they're doing. You can see that they're making people work together and unite to downsize government and to advance liberty. But here's the thing. They can't do it by themselves. There are thousands of positions open to be run for. There are all kinds of laws and departments we need to dismantle. If you're ready to help us do that, go to lp.org/states. And the final note, the great news is primaries are over in almost every state. And if the primaries are over in your state and you have not already done so, or even if they're not over and you haven't done so, you need to register as a libertarian. If you go to lp.org, you can follow the instructions on how to register to vote as a libertarian. There is nothing that scares Democrats and Republicans more than a large number of libertarian registrations. This is one of the most effective tools that we have, libertarian registrations. It's one of the most effective tools we have when it comes to putting pressure on the big parties to downsize government. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvin Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.